Some of the best lessons don't come from a classroom. They come from experience. On The Power of Advice, a new podcast series from Capital Group, you'll hear from CEOs, investors, and founders about how they built careers, took risks, and reinvented themselves. If you're starting your own journey, this is the kind of advice you won't want to miss. Available wherever you get your podcasts. Published by Capital Client Group, Inc.
Looking for jewelry that feels as good as it looks? Jenny Bird delivers modern designs that are comfortable, easy to wear, and effortlessly versatile. Every piece makes you feel instantly on trend without trying too hard. Need to send a gift they'll be sure to love? Jenny Bird ships fast, and the packaging is thoughtful too. Jenny Bird isn't just jewelry. It's your new favorite style essential. Explore more at jenny-bird.com and get 20% off your first purchase using code ONTREND20.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around waiting for the track to dry is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment.
I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius. And this weekend, the Lakers split a pair of games that had me feeling a whole gamut of emotions. On Saturday night, I was so irritated. I'm so irritated with the player availability thing. I was so irritated that I barely watched the fourth quarter, which never happens. And yes, I went back and watched it, but it was like a mild form of protest from me, where it was like, if y'all are missing these games due to leg soreness, I'm going to miss this fourth quarter due to eye soreness, because I'm so tired of watching like the South Bay Lakers play for the big club. Although one of them was sort of a rose through the concrete in the Rose City. Drew Timmy got his first real minutes with the Lakers, scored 21 points in that game and impressed JJ Redick enough to get minutes in the second night of the back-to-back last night against Toronto. The game started, as many Laker games have started recently. The Lakers gave up 18 points in the paint in the first quarter alone and were down by 7, 30-23 at the end of that first quarter. And the Lakers came out to start the second quarter with a two big lineup, where Timmy was flanked by DeAndre Ayton, had LeBron at the 3, Marcus Smart and Vando at the 2. Just a big ass lineup. And the Lakers played a ton of 2-3 zone from that point on. On 9 of the next 11 possessions for the Raptors, they took a jump shot after just absolutely getting into the paint over and over and over again. And the Lakers go on a massive run that swings the game from being down 7 to being up 9. And they continue throughout the 2-3 zone for the rest of the game, and probably the longest I've ever seen a Lakers team stay in a zone in a game. Maybe you could dispute that, but I can't remember a different game where that happened that much. I've been clamoring for this zone just as a look, as a coverage. It's not going to fix everything. It's not going to be everything that they need it to be. But the fact that they ran the 2-3 and they went really big, those things matter in conjunction. They held a team under 93 points. I was telling you guys last night, like, the Lakers hold you over 100. Like, that should count for like 1.5 losses. But 93 points after giving up 30 in the first quarter, D, sort of a signs of life on the defensive end. And so our novella, as always, rolls on, D. My morale was as low as it could have been. And then the very last game of the first half of the season, they sort of show a light at the end of the tunnel, like, hey, they've got a different look on the defensive end that I've been begging for, that it was great to see it actually work.
What a two games. I gave up earlier than you on Saturday's game.
Did you?
It was on, but it was more serving as background noise. I was irritated that entire game from beginning to end. The player availability stuff, the days of Kendrick Nunn being reported to come back in a week and then being out the entire season with very specific injury reporting on like what was wrong with him, only for him to not come back at all. And it just lingered and lingered and lingered to now players missing games with leg soreness and then being on the injury report for a single game and then coming back the next game. I am... Stop me before I say words that I shouldn't.
I think what they did do, I think they looked at the schedule in the five games in seven nights and were like, this is a schedule loss. We're going to sit our guys, right? Luke had been dealing with a groin thing type of thing. I think it was just like, this is going to be one of those games we looked at even beforehand. But in the context of everything else and how poorly they've been playing, just super irritating.
Then sit LeBron too. Why play any of these guys?
Yeah.
I get it. Don't get me wrong. And then LeBron's put in a position to play on the second night of a back-to-back, and he does again. So consecutive back-to-backs that the Lakers have played, LeBron has appeared in both the front and the back end. Luka's groin soreness, he played through that in that second game last night. The Portland game, I was just like, oh, man. And then the degree to which it was, what are we actually doing out here? And are these guys ready? And then Timmy sort of being like, well, I'm ready. All I need is a green light.
Been waiting for this chance. Yeah.
I can shoot whatever I want. I can, not defense optional, because I thought he was actually competing defensively. He's just not a great athlete or anything like that. He's going to have his deficiencies. And so fast forward to last night's game and against a good Raptors team, I thought well, we can't really ask these guys to play man-to-man. In fact, early in the game, the Lakers are getting torched in all of these man-to-man coverages, and my irritation level was spilling over from the night before, and you should have seen how many social media posts I typed and deleted.
Oh.
I posted one about the Lakers switching into disadvantageous matchups, and I was just super irritated. You have your defensive alignments. Vando is on Brandon Ingram. Ingram is one of the players that Vando can bother most in terms of a high-level scoring player, and you put Vando on him, and suddenly that guy isn't as good anymore. The one possession that stood out to me is Vando's on Ingram, and Gabe is on...
This is the first quarter before they go to the zone?
I think so, yes.
Okay.
And I think Gabe is on Jamal Shedd or one of their smaller guards. It might have been Quickly. They set a step-up screen, and Vando, he understands what the scheme is. He jumps out on a switch. Gabe then is like in no man's land, or basically in prison against Brandon Ingram. B.I. is backing him down and bodying up, catches the ball, and then attacks. And I think it's either a direct kick out or a kick out to the top, and then a swing to Mamu, who hits a three. And Mamu was already on fire. And I was just like, God damn it. What are we doing? If you can't sit back in your man-to-man defense and say, we're not giving up this switch. Of all the switches, we want our best perimeter defender with size out here on Brandon Ingram during this stretch. If you can't do that, then what are you doing defensively, Pete?
Small little stat interjection. Lakers switch more often than any other team in the NBA.
And a lot of it are these 1-4 switches that allow defenses to then target Luka, target Gabe Vincent before he went down, try to target Austin Reeves and basically say, target Rui. The worst part of some of these switches is there was another play where Toronto ran a double drag screen at the top of the key. I think it was Brandon Ingram, but it could have been Scotty Barnes as well. But comes off a double drag, and Rui is the second defender in the double drag. So he's guarding the second screener. Rui doesn't get up high enough in the screen. So he's basically late on his switch. One of the reasons why you switch, Pete, is to contain the ball. We're not going to get beat on dribble drives because the screen that you're trying to use isn't going to hit anyone. That's going to still stay on the defender. This guy should be jumping out. Rui's late, turns the corner, layup at the basket. And I'm just like, what are we doing here? Can't execute switches correctly, are switching when I don't think you should be switching. But if you're switching 1-4, that is the appropriate thing. Vando steps out, does his job, but Gabe's on an island now against Brandon Ingram. And I'm like, what is this? And so to start the second quarter and see, oh no, they're playing their biggest dudes imaginable. The only biggest player that wasn't in the game were basically Jackson and Rui. Everyone else is freaking massive.
Right. But Luka too, this is sort of the point that I want to make, D, is that they've got enough of these types of players.
Yes.
And our guards outside of Austin stink enough to where you have yes. enough to where you could just kind of do this thing a lot throughout the game. And they did it for the first time where they were just like, we're going to go big. And Timmy is actually very central to this too.
He is. They had him playing on the wing. I'm not smart enough of a baseball analyst to know which between left field and right field is the place where you stick your worst defender. But basically, that's how they were treating Timmy. They put him on the wing of the zone, same side as Vando. So Vando's got all of this coverage yes. responsibility. And I was just like, oh, they're protecting Timmy as much as they can within the zone. But he's a good positional defender. He's a smart player overall. And it was just like, okay, well, they're protecting him here. They've got Vando and Smart, their two most active ball hawk defenders at the top of the zone. And so those guys aren't playing a passive zone either. And then you've got LeBron and Ayton who are just like, okay, well, we're the athletes on the back line. We're going to rotate. We're going to talk. We're going to sweep and clean the glass. When they were coming up to set on ball screens, Ayton was stepping out yep. as mm-hmm. appropriate and being a deterrent at the top of the floor. And then because they were screening the ball, it was then Vando dropping down and sort of replacing Ayton and being like, okay, well, we've still got athleticism on the back line. And so I was very much like, well, this is an idea that clearly has a smart foundation to it. So let's go to break here, Pete. And when we come back, I actually want to talk more about the bones of the zone defense.
Some of the best lessons don't come from a classroom. They come from experience. On The Power of Advice, a new podcast series from Capital Group, you'll hear from CEOs, investors, and founders about how they built careers, took risks, and reinvented themselves. If you're starting your own journey, this is the kind of advice you won't want to miss. Available wherever you get your podcasts. Published by Capital Client Group, Inc.
Looking for jewelry that feels as good as it looks? Jenny Bird delivers modern designs that are comfortable, easy to wear, and effortlessly versatile. Every piece makes you feel instantly on trend without trying too hard. Need to send a gift they'll be sure to love? Jenny Bird ships fast, and the packaging is thoughtful, too. Jenny Bird isn't just jewelry. It's your new favorite style essential. Explore more at jenny-bird.com and get 20% off your first purchase using code ONTREND20.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
The thing that impressed me both in that second quarter stretch and then in the fourth quarter stretch when they went back to the zone was the level of communication that started to pick up over time. There was a fourth quarter possession where Luka was at the top of the zone, and you're in a zone for that much of the game. Toronto starts to break it down at times, right? And it looked like they had solutions and they were starting to score a little bit. The Lakers, though, didn't panic. They stuck in their zone. They started talking more. And there was a possession that stood out to me where Luka was really pointing and being like, I'm here, you're there. And he was talking to the back line and helping to organize things from the top of the zone. And possessions like that where defensively you start to get in the comfort zone and understand what your actual responsibilities are and passing guys off the way that you're supposed to within a zone, that's what stood out to me by the end of the game in terms of their effectiveness.
Absolutely. And I think in a bigger picture sense, building a good defense around Luka, which is going to be one of the biggest challenges of building a championship team around him, I think zone defense, the Lakers should endeavor to become one of the best zone defense teams in the league, because I think this plays into some of Luka's strengths and accounts for some of his biggest weaknesses, particularly that whole, you know, blown by on the perimeter type of idea. The whole premise with the team that we've talked ad nauseum about how slow they are, the reason why zone is a viable look in certain situations is that you don't want a team that's slow to be chasing players around all of that often. Now, the switching and the frequency of the switching for the Lakers is one of the ways that you bridge that as well, but it's not the only way. And one of the things that I like about this, and again, I want to emphasize that it's playing zone while being big at the same time. I don't think you can do this same thing if it's Gabe out there, even if it's one of the other smaller guards that are out there. I do think that Austin is sort of the outer border of this because he's a good team defender who can draw charges. This is also a style of play that is conducive to drawing charges and guys who are good at that. But those smaller players, you cannot do this the same way because there's a certain component, and the Lakers did this last night, of peel-off switching within zones, and that's one of the versions that you can have. And there are a couple of times, and this is seems to me one of DA's favorite things to do on defense, who had a historic game, by the way. We didn't even bring that up. Went 10 for 10 from the field, had 25 and 10, just phenomenal night on both ends of the floor. But one of the things he seems to love to do on defense is showing that, hey, I could kind of stick with somebody out in open space. He seems to kind of relish and activate all of that, that as you were saying, you know, the Lakers bigs, one of the questions you have when you run a zone is how are we going to guard pick and rolls? Are we going to keep that five back in that regular 2-3 zone type of shell? Or is he going to come up X5, the defensive big man? Is he going to step up with the big man coming to set the screen? We did that. We brought him up, like you said. And on some of those, that was the point in which the peel-off switch happened. And then it's like Marcus peels off onto the big guy. But it's because there's always kind of a big body, whether it's Marcus or Vando, any of the five guys that are on the floor, they're not so overmatched from a strength perspective that them plus half the attention of another player can't help cover it. And so on both ends of the floor, I thought that that just collective size was essential to making that zone work. And then with respect to Timmy on that bottom wing right there, I'm a big believer that there are some players whose NBA position is as a second big. If they're the only big player on the floor, their weaknesses are going to show. They might not be able to defend the rim well enough, which is the case with Timmy, but if they are next to somebody that can, they can cover that, but it then puts them in a position where they have to cover the perimeter. Timmy is a great example of somebody. You don't want him going from one side of the court to the other, trying to close out, X out in rotations, things like that. But if you can keep him in this general zone, he had one closeout to the corner that was slow as hell. He did it best he could. It wasn't very fast, but it limits the amount of how much those bigger lineups have to run around. I'm also a big believer that just like with man-to-man defense, if your only pick and roll coverage were drop coverages, and then a team started scorching that, if you were to be like, oh, well, man-to-man defense doesn't work, that would be absurd, right? Just because a 2-3 zone doesn't work doesn't mean that, oh, zone defenses don't work against this team. It's important to have a mix of zone coverages. For one, different versions of your 2-3, one where you keep the five back, another one where you bring it up, one where you peel off switch, one where you don't. There's all these different variations like that. But you also need to have like an odd guard front. We could talk more and more about this, D, but zone defenses in general, again, I think that these are coverages that the Lakers can go to that they've been getting their ass beat in their man coverages for 6 weeks now, that sort of necessity is the mother of invention. And I think they've ended up here. But I think to your point about Luka as well, like, think of all of the things that plays into that's best about his defensive game, his recognition, his ability to get steals and anticipate, his rebounding, all of that. I think this is sort of it's not the main thing. I don't think it should be the main defensive look the Lakers have, but it's got to be a club in the bag.
They need to be able to do this. It's not going to work against every team. I think one thing that we should say too is that Toronto is not a great outside shooting team. And I think what happened to them was like the opposite of what the Hornets did in the second half, which is the Hornets saw the ball go in and they got very excited about the ball going in. And then the ball just kept going in and in and in and in. It's just like, oh, suddenly it's a rout.
Basketball's a flow sport. It's a rhythm sport. You let somebody get hot like that, it's very hard to put the fire out.
So the flip side of that is what happened to Toronto. Toronto got a bunch of good looks against the zone too, Pete, and they just missed them. And you could tell they started to get dejected a little bit. Even on ones where it's just like, oh, they ripped through the top of the zone and got right into the middle and then put up a little floater, bounced around the rim two or three times, and then fell off the rim. And they were just like, what the F is going on with some of these shots? So you could see them start to get a little bit discouraged. And then the pace that the Lakers were playing with, I thought, was good as well, right? And so they started to push the ball up against a team that wanted to run against them. And I thought that shift in the first half where like DA was catching all of those lobs and was really running the floor, a lot of that was predicated off of Luka saying, well, I'm going to push. It was a very low possession game. That's one of the reasons why Toronto only scored 93 points. It was because it was like a 95 possession game or something like that.
That in and of itself is a victory for the Lakers. They came into the game as the number one fast break team in terms of points per game in the whole league.
One of the interesting things that I've noticed is early on in the season when the Lakers were having defensive success, most of their success was as a half court defense team. Much of that level has fallen off during this stretch where in the half court defensively, they have struggled way more than what they did to start the year. And when you combine that with their proclivity to be a bad transition defense team, that's how you're in the bottom five of the league overall, right? So it's like, oh, can't stop anyone in the half court. And then transition, everyone's game plan is to run against us, and they're having success there. So the Lakers being able to get back in their zone, make teams be a little bit more tentative on how they're going to attack, have teams have to shoot in the mid-range a little bit more because they're not just able to dissect and get downhill either in isolation or after running a pick and roll. It was a nice changeup. I do hope the Lakers continue to practice this and continue to have different looks. The thing that I would want to see carry over, particularly from like the fourth quarter where the Lakers really did like jump from a 7 or 8 point game to a 15, 16 point game and end up winning in double figures, was that communication within the zone. You could see that they were talking. You could see that they were passing players off appropriately. You could see that they were veer switching and peel switching and all of that stuff effectively. And that gave Toronto a bunch of problems and it screwed up their rhythm. And the guys who you would expect to carry them offensively just couldn't. Again, I agree with you, though. This isn't going to be an every night solution. It's not going to be an every team solution. But I was happy to see that in this little stretch where now they're going to be on the road the entire time. They're not going to shoot around as much. Grammy Tripp is here. Can they lock in and bring forward the right habits for this sort of defense so that it can be a club in their bag, just like you said?
Let's go to break here. I want to come back, talk about going big on offense.
In a world full of noise, long-term thinking stands out. On the Capital Ideas podcast, Capital Group leaders explore the decisions that matter most in investing, leadership, and life. It's a rare look inside a firm that's been helping people pursue their financial goals for more than 90 years. Listen to the Capital Ideas podcast from Capital Group, published by Capital Client Group, Inc.
Looking for jewelry that feels as good as it looks? Jenny Bird delivers modern designs that are comfortable, easy to wear, and effortlessly versatile. Every piece makes you feel instantly on trend without trying too hard. Need to send a gift they'll be sure to love? Jenny Bird ships fast, and the packaging is thoughtful, too. Jenny Bird isn't just jewelry. It's your new favorite style essential. Explore more at jenny-bird.com and get 20% off your first purchase using code ONTREND20.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
One of the things I loved about the start of that second quarter, and think about this going forward, you know, I'm a big believer in sort of being great at the thing that you can be. Again, so many laments about how slow the team is and unathletic they are. They are big, though, and they have an unusual number of players that can post up. So think of that lineup to start the second quarter between Ayton, LeBron, and Timmy. And this is something that Timmy was a very highly regarded college player where he played at Gonzaga and was a phenomenal scorer. They went deep
in the
tournament.
They're all-time leading scorer, right?
Yeah, for a great program, right? And he's one of those odd kind of in-between position players on the defensive end that's why he's 26 years old and on the fringes of the NBA bouncing around is he doesn't really have that defensive role. But that dude can score. And so what was fun about the start of that second quarter is they were playing through Drew Timmy. And so between Timmy, Ayton, and LeBron, you got three guys on the floor at the same time that can post up. Then, oh, by the way, Marcus Smart ends up posting up Emmanuel quickly, and Jamison Battle has to rotate over, and Smart just flings it up there. DA gets a lob for a layup and a finish out of that. But in that little stretch, just the first 5 minutes of the second quarter, we had four separate Lakers operating in the post. DA isn't like a huge, we're going to throw the ball to you every time in the post. But if you get a smaller guy on him that isn't really used to playing post defense, and there are so many players in the NBA who are not used to playing post defense, you put three or four guys out there on the floor at the same time that can competently do that, then you can create all sorts of problems. It also catalyzes Vando on offense to be that sort of second wave putback type of guy where it's like on offensive rebounds, this is the premise of a lot of Houston's offensive. Like even if we miss, we got DA on this side trying to get the board, Timmy trying to get the putback on this side, Vando flying in from the perimeter and doing all that. And so I hop in the time machine with me, man. Let's talk some Lakers triple post offense because I think that they've got something here that is very unusual that on top of everything else, that's usually when teams are smallest is at the second and fourth quarter. Off of their bench, teams like to do a lot of switching. It's a lot of small ball fives, things like that. I don't think there are very many benches around the league that are equipped to defend this style of basketball.
I'm super intrigued by Timmy playing the role that I think the Lakers have envisioned for Maxi Kleber, but he hasn't necessarily been good enough and productive enough or as much of a threat offensively to do it. And that's the spacing second big. The post-centric offense that you're talking about with these groups, one of the things that can happen is it will allow Timmy to space as well from the weak side and not always have to operate out of the post. And if a team does have to dedicate bigger players to defend during this portion of the game, then Timmy is a nice antidote to this idea as a floor spacing big. You mentioned that he had 21 points the night before. He only had 3 points last night, but the one shot he hit was a three. And I will forever argue that if you're a big guy who is thought to be a floor spacer or someone who can space the floor, and the first shot you take and make is a three-pointer, that might be the only shot you have to hit all night because the defense got it in their head that you're a threat.
They got to respect you. And Timmy is, that's not something that's been one of the better parts of his game. That's part of the reason why he's so talented offensively that if he were also a floor spacer all the way up through here, there would have been somebody that'd been like, yeah, you're not great on defense, but you're so good on offense that we'll figure it out. Him adding this component to his game would be a game changer for him.
It would be. The thing is, though, is like defensively in today's NBA, if you're a big who can't defend or you don't have a natural defensive position, it might have like thrown him down a few levels as well, like generally.
Always, yeah.
It's not like a great example of the guy that you're talking about. It's like Naz Reid. Even Naz Reid was like a second round pick or a guy who wasn't highly touted, right? And he was on a minimum or basically that before he got paid this most recent stretch. But part of the reason why he got paid is because they found a utility for him as a defensive player, particularly as a second big. It's just like, oh, well, you can do this on defense. Great. And you're going to make 38 or whatever percent of your three-pointers, and if you're wide open, it feels like it's money, and the defense reacts to you.
You can attack off the dribble. Yeah, he's so talented offensively that, you know, just that's what it comes down to, is can we find a role for you on
defense?
Exactly.
Offensively, Timmy's got a role. you can stick him in horn sets. You can do a variety of things. You can park him at the elbow. He's very good as a release valve player. He can play in the pocket. He's not going to be like a lob threat, but what he can do is roll and then roll in the post-ups. He can do that as well. I don't want to over-exaggerate how important he should be for this team, but as a 10th guy and a second big who can fill a role for you, I'm intrigued by him playing in lineups with LeBron and Ayton and these groups where collectively there's a bunch of size.
And this is something I was clamoring for in the last pod of last week, is that the end of our bench is not very good and has had ample opportunity through a half of a season to show like, hey, if you've got something here, you have a chance to stick. So let's see some of the other guys, Bufkin, Timmy. Timmy is right in line with that, that the him usurping Kleba, as you pointed out, that was something that just like Nick Smith Jr., I'd been like, whenever he plays well, I'm like, man, that style of player would be really good. Kleba was similar as well, but Timmy adds an element of we can give you the ball and you can get your own bucket that he didn't in that last game, but the Lakers played through him, that post-play oftentimes looking for your own shot is the third or fourth option. It's really you want to catch and survey and see who else is open. And if they are guarded almost by definition, that means you have a one-on-one that a guy like Timmy could then take advantage of if he's got that one-on-one type of matchup. But his ability to pass out of the post and things like that, like you, the ability to play through him, give him the ball and get all of those other really talented offensive players, LeBron, DA, Austin, even when he comes back, like think about what that crew could be if you say replace Marcus with Austin right there. That's a lot of skill and size relative to their position, D. I'm excited. I think it's something that they could really develop over the next couple of weeks.
And this is where you start to play to the imbalance of the team. The Lakers' strength of their group right now is not in their guards. Bufkin's on a 10-day. Nick Smith is a two-way player. And Gabe is Gabe. I'm not going to rag on him or anything. He hit his first shot last game and he had a couple more shots and it's just like, that's great. He even hit a two-pointer. But Gabe is who he is. And if you want to rely on Gabe Vincent versus relying on the collective size of your group, and which one do you think is going to be more productive for you or impact the game more consistently, I would argue it's going to be your collective size.
I love how you frame that too. It's not like Gabe Vincent versus Drew Timmy or Smith. It's like, it's not the player individually. It is what is the overall effect that you're putting out on the court, the collective five-man group. How does that put pressure on the other team?
Austin Reeves was one of the best players in the league before he got hurt. I don't know if he would have been that for this whole like month that he's been out. The ramp up of LeBron and Luka's usage and everything else, it might have tamped down Austin's production. Who knows? It also could have just been a very hot six-week stretch for a player who we all love and respect and think is awesome. But my point is, when you lose that caliber of player, the Lakers don't have someone behind Austin Reeves that's going to be like, well, we're going to now play the same exact way and get the same amount of production. When you add in the fact that so many other players are in and out of the lineup, Rui seemingly still on a minutes restriction. And then some of your other players that you rely on are, I don't mean this as a pejorative, but tryhards. When I think about Laravia and Marcus Smart, their offense is going to come and go, but they're playing so damn hard. Laravia couldn't make a jumper for anything, but I'm just like, well, he's the only guy that plays in every game.
I'm a big Jake fan. He plays hard and he plays in every game. Sign me up.
He plays with such motor. He's always getting hit in the face or knocked down, or a guy is trying to club him, or he's trying to box out a bigger dude. And it's just like, yeah, his jumper's not going in. I wonder why. You know what I mean? He's out here playing every single night super hard. It's not like you're going to say, oh, well, let's just lean into our perimeter guys and they're going to score us and replace Austin's production. That's not going to happen. But if you can generate better looks for those players, if you can play through your size and post up LeBron, there was a play where I think it was a LeBron post up, but you talked about Vando as a cutter. In these sorts of lineups, Vando's also going to be a guy who can like set pin in screens, and he set a pin in screen for Marcus, and the ball swung to Marcus and he got wide open corner three that he knocked down. And these are the shots that if Smart's going to make threes, it's not going to be the off the dribble ones or the ones where he's like heavily contested. Like those are nice when they go in, but those are not reliable shots. But the wide open ones, it's like, okay, he can flirt with like 37% on those.
I love Marcus. There is no such thing as a reliable Marcus three. Like even the wide open ones, sure. When he's cold, man. And this is true of a decent number of players, but you are correct that, yeah, he's not going to hit a ton of like super high difficulty ones, but it's going to come and go just as it will with Jake, to your point.
And that's 100% right. My larger point is, though, is that when you play these groups together, there are still ways to generate good shots for the players that are on the court. And the collective of how do we find a rhythm together, and it might be Vando sending a pin and screen for Marcus Smart. It might be Smart ducking in with a post in, drawing a little bit of help, and then him looking for Ayton. As a side note, Marcus being the one player who is like consistently looking for Ayton, I feel like he goes out of his way to try to find him.
If he gets a switch or something, it's always like, I'm looking for that post entry right there. Yep.
He looks for him a lot on his little duck-ins. He looks for him a lot on these little lobs and throwing it over the top to him. LeBron was looking for him a little bit more yesterday as well. But I feel like Marcus is the one guy who can force it into Ayton a little bit more. Now that comes with risks and everything else, but to your point about Ayton, he didn't miss a shot. He was engaged on both sides of the floor. And if there's a certain amount of like, oh, well, you got to maybe put an extra bit of food in the dog's bowl in order to get him to guard the house. It's just like, that's kind of how it is with Ayton. And Marcus Smart is very happy to go back sure, and get that extra scoop of food for Ayton. And if that's what's going to matter in the bigger picture, then this is all a piece of the puzzle, Pete. The Lakers are trying to put it together in a super competitive West. Minnesota has surged now, and Houston has been in like a bit of a funk the way that the Lakers have been, but they're a good basketball team too. And one of these teams is going to be in seventh. Phoenix continues to play well.
We were almost that team. Had we lost last night, we would have dipped right into the play-in after such a good start.
And so finding a way to win, particularly on the second night of a back-to-back when you got blasted the night before. And now they go on an eight-game road trip. They start off in Denver. That's always a tough game. I don't care that Jokic isn't playing. I don't care who they do or don't have. The Lakers are going to have to play their best basketball against a Denver team whose infrastructure looks strong. They got blasted by Charlotte the same way the Lakers got blasted by Charlotte. They're going to be looking to bounce back as well. And it's going to be super interesting to see how much continuing to build an identity like on the fly to a certain degree, how much of that is going to carry over into a road trip where honestly, man, eight games, they need to be above 500 during this road trip. And I haven't even looked at the exact schedule yet, but to me, it doesn't matter. It's just like, can you get five wins? Can you get six wins? And it starts tomorrow in Denver.
Yeah, gauntlet ahead for our Lakers on this eight-game roadie coming up. We'll wrap up here, but before we do, I have an exciting announcement I want to share with you guys. I'm very excited to announce that I will be joining Offside and making 10 videos a month for them, breaking down plays and players and the team at large for Offside. Offside is a new app that's in the development phase. They're still beta testing it right now. And that's part of what's exciting about it is signing up for it now allows you to have a voice in the development. We can help build something that's a really cool place where you can get interesting video content from creators that you like, stats and data visualizations that they incorporate AI that I think just has a ton of potential to be sort of an all-in-one spot for a lot of Laker fans. That's also where I'm going to be hanging out online. As you guys know, I don't tweet anymore or anything like that, but that's where I'm going to be hanging out during games. And speaking of that, to my old playback crew, I'm probably not going to be doing the live calls for the rest of the season. I really want to focus on putting the best pod out possible and making Offside the best place possible. So if you want to hang out with me during the game, they've got a chat over there where I'm going to be there all the time. So the specifics of the videos, I'll be making 10 of them per month. They're going to be a little different from the old LFR videos in that they're going to be in 9x16 orientation. So the shape of your phone rather than the shape of your TV. Going to zoom in on all the different micro topics. I've got one coming out on Gabe today. Later this week, I'm going to do one on Drew Timmy and then another on our 2-3 zone. So it should be a pace of about 3 per week. So if you're interested in signing up, please do. It's at offside.gg/beta. We're going to put that link in the show notes for this one, but very excited to join Offside and not just make videos for them, but help develop the whole thing. It's going to be me alongside Anthony, Raj, Daman has joined us as an advisor. So if you can, check out offside.gg/beta. I'm going to be referring to it a lot here on this show of, hey, I just made this video for them. Please come check it out. So really excited about this new era and being able to make videos again. So thank you so much to the Offside guys for that. We will wrap up here and be back tomorrow to talk about the Lakers at the halfway point of the season. But until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
James has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. And the Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound to Lonnie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel the winner. It's on the way.
Kobe Bryant. 48 points. 16 rebounds. Shaq with his 8th block. An NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe. Hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a 3-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one, miss it.
Bryant,
it's over.
Shot clock now to 5. Bryant, yeah. And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic. Trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.